You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the bluest room in town. Yeah, the actually funny.
It is Blue Monday here on the Blue Room. On Blue Monday, is today Blue Monday officially, Dave? Everyone's back to work. First full week of January. You think that's the correct technical term, isn't it?
Well, that's the reason why I initially tried to call it Monday Blues, because everyone's going back to work. Haven't we? I'm playing well, I think. Certainly, what, about 6 weeks ago. So, no, we keep the name it's got today. Obviously, hopefully, we cheer a lot of people up, given the. Well, let's hope we're getting into some decent form when we get back to Aston Villa coming up and then the replay against Crystal Palace. But yeah, it's absolutely freezing as well. It is so, so cold.
I love this type of weather. Like, compared to the rain and wind and drizzle we've had over Christmas and stuff, just like nice, crisp winter's day, sun's out, but it's freezing. Big fan.
Oh, mate, you've got your hat on and definitely out running sort of this sort of weather, aren't you? That's right up your forte, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I only took it off to be professional on this video. But I've just seen my hair and now it's I should have put it back. I should have left it on. But as we always say, if you watch us on YouTube, do hit like, do subscribe, do comment. Any topics we're talking about, if you're listening to us on iTunes, Spotify, or whatever you get your podcast, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does all help as we move into the new year. Dave, just quickly before we talk about Everton, over the weekend, did you watch much of the FA Cup? I watched Sunderland Newcastle and loved it. Just thought it was great atmosphere, mad build up, potential for all kinds of embarrassing antics, which both sets of fans delivered on, I think. And there was no VAR, which was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it was nice to see that. I've seen quite a few games. Yeah. Liverpool against Arsenal was an absolute stunner last night. I thought I know we finished 2-0 to them, but the amount of chances Arsenal missed, it was end to end. It was a cracking FA Cup game. That, going back to what you said there about Sunderland Newcastle, our mate Tindall, the assistant manager to Eddie Howe. I don't know if you've seen it at the end, but they decided to go and get a photo outside one of the goals. The one that was where all of their fans were. And I just thought it was like, it was going a little bit too far when he was doing that. But if you look at the video, it's him sort of walking around trying to gather all the players together.
Yeah.
Do you know, like when you've, I don't know, when you've qualified for something or when you've got your degree or something like that, you're trying to get your whole family and your partner together and all that. It was exactly like that. Once everyone's smiling and all cheesy and stuff like that. And I just thought, yeah, mate, you just seem like a bit more of a dickhead, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he was like a photographer at a wedding trying to get the group shot, wasn't he?
That's exactly it.
Like, no one wants to do it. Like, everyone's having a nice time, just like chatting away. And then the photographer comes along, and it's like, come on, let's all get together for this group shot. You're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
do we have to?
I think he's got to be one of the most cheesy assistant managers, cheesy anybody on managerial staff at a football club. He's got to be the cheesiest fella I've ever seen, and somebody who sits in a sunbed when he goes home.
Yeah, 100%. I found Arsenal so excruciating to watch yesterday. It's just like, yeah. just it's that classic trope of just them trying to pass it into the net, isn't it? Like, just have a shot, lads. And I mean, Kai Havertz just confuses me.
Yeah, so, he's
He doesn't really do anything to wind me up, but I watch him and he's like, I think he just wind me up. And really
yeah. Matt, I've got an outstanding stat on this. Mm. So Arsenal have lost the last three games. They've only scored one goal. They've had 61 shots on goal and only scored once. And that was in their 2-1 defeat at Fulham. Now that you've got a problem in itself there that you're just not able to finish. But I think, like you said there, it just seems every player that gets in close to goal just wants to take an extra touch.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Odegaard at the bar, and that's the only time I've seen somebody just literally take one touch and just have a blast at goal. The others, like you said, Havertz, he's infuriating. If you were sat there watching that, you'd be absolutely pulling what hair you had left out of your head, because he's a ridiculously difficult player to like in that sort of regard. Arsenal played well, with the exception of that. Mm. Arsenal dominated the game, with the exception of that. And then Liverpool scored in the 80th minute, just robbed the victory. And if you're, that's got to be the worst way to lose a game, when you miss chances like that. I mean, we've done that sort of thing in the past, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And we're not a prolific side, are we? But watching that, yeah, I mean, it's a big competition for Arsenal. I don't think they're going to go and win the trophy. I don't think they're going to win the league. I don't think they're going to win the Champions League. Liverpool themselves are probably great favourites right now to go and win the league. I was surprised they played like a team that's straightforward and with all the best players, to be fair. Because at this stage of the competition, I think we got into a straight where you don't play your best players in the early rounds of the FA Cup. Much the same as particularly when you get a lower club that you play against. I mean, we've had a few in the past, haven't we, where you haven't played your full first 11. We did show at Palace as well, which I was a little bit surprised about. But yeah, I mean, it was good to see the FA Cup look a little bit more like its traditional self.
It felt like there's loads more teams playing the strongest 11s than like recent years. Like, I don't know if that's just because like the congestion has been so bad that so many players have got injuries and suspensions. Obviously, we've got AFCON this year as well, and the Asian Cup, haven't we, which have depleted a lot of squad. But you know, I watched a bit of City, and you know, they had a couple in there. But by and large, like apart from Rodri, it was, you know, close to a full strength side, really. Obviously, Newcastle had to go for it. Us and Palace both played strong sides, you know, again, mainly due to not being able to rotate. So, I mean, and that, even Chelsea, I watched a bit of that game at the weekend as well. They were really strong against Preston. So, as much as we try and downplay it, it feels like there's a lot of pressure on a lot of managers at the moment, and they dare not lose a football match. But on to Everton, Dave, sort of putting last week behind us a little bit and looking ahead. I want to speak about something today that I thought has kind of gone under the radar a bit in the aftermath of all the DCL red card VAR fallout, and that's the stuff around McNeil. We haven't found out yet from the club how long he's going to be out for, but listen, it looked awful at the time, didn't it? Going off with a leg brace. I think Dice said it was his ankle afterwards, so it was really swollen. So one of those ones they have to wait for the swelling to subside before they can do anything about it. Hopefully it's just a really bad ankle roll and he's sound and he's back again in a few weeks. But I don't know, like in my head, I'm sort of making me peace with, if someone said he's going to be out for 6 weeks, I'd sort of probably take that now. If you get what I mean. What do Everton do without him in regards to the 11? Because Dan Juma obviously came in and played on Thursday and did okay for half an hour, didn't he? And then faded off the game massively. But I think it's probably fair to say that Dyche has got his doubts about him, given the way in which he's used them so far this season. What do you think Everton look like going forward without McNeil? Is it a case of McNeil out, Dan Juma in, or do you think we'll see a few different ways that he's trying to combat that in terms of personnel and maybe change of shapes as well?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. With McNeil, He was the sad thing about it, he was really, really quiet against Palace as well. And I think as much as our man Pete McFarlane absolutely adores this fella with the songs on him and all that sort of thing, I wouldn't go as far as saying I don't particularly value him. I think he's an important player for us. I think sometimes he's really, really frustrating. But then, that's the common theme about most of our players, isn't it? When you can see them perform really, really well, and then the next game, you'll barely see them in the match and they'll just not be there. Having him out is lucky in a sense that we've got a really consistent left-back who stands in behind him. The thing that makes me a little bit more concerned about that is he tends to form a partnership with McNeil on that left-hand side. McNeil will always chase back with him as well. That side of the pitch, I think it's gone by the wayside, how important it is for us and how comfortable it's been for us. And like, for instance, I can't remember the last time, I hope this is not a kiss of death, the last time we conceded a goal via that side of the pitch. When somebody's crossed it in, Mikhailenko's been absolutely magnificent this season, probably my player of the season so far. It's not him I'm concerned about, it's whoever's in front of him that needs to track back. Now, you've mentioned Dan Juma there. I think there's maybe even a case for Dobbin as well that can come in, and you've got somebody I think who's learning to find his trade in that sort of side of the pitch. I think he's quite a versatile player. I think Dyche, I might be a surprise if he was put in there rather than just being on the bench, but I think you're looking at somebody who is desperate to show what he can do. He's going to have, and anything he's told to do, he's going to do it as much as he possibly can. So I don't think he'd be sort of thrown out of hand by Dyche. But yeah, I think that the natural person to throw in there is Dan Juma, and he's again another body who's the last couple of games we've seen him, particularly that one at Spurs. He's somebody who wrecks your head as well, isn't he? Really, he's the type of player again that you can just see him being outstanding. He'll do something ridiculously good. Scored a wonder goal at some point, and then other times you'll think, how's this lad getting a start for us? I think there's a real issue there. I think he's one of like several who Dyche has struggled to properly get the best out of and doesn't fully trust. A little bit similar to Patterson at right back. He doesn't seem to fully trust these type of lads here. I'm not too sure what the effect has of that in when they come on, the trust in them, you know. Other thing as well, I might think of as well, is Harrison moving over to that side could help out. He's another bit of a workhorse, isn't he? He could do that sort of thing. So there are options, but it is a big blow. And like you say there, I mean, it looked like his leg was going to be out for, well, at least until the end of the season. So a boost that it's any water, maybe a few weeks that he's out for, but it's definitely the main thing that needs addressing right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be dead interesting what he does, because I think if Ashley Young was fit, I could just see him going and playing there, to be honest. Yep. Like in front of Mikhailenko, because you know, he obviously likes Young. Coleman's back available now, isn't he? And played pretty well, didn't he, as well at the on Thursday night. I love that clip of him watching the VAR screen. Yeah. He's going nowhere and storming off. It's just absolutely classic Seamus. But
Matt, with you saying that, when I've seen that since, I'm willing to retract some of what I said last week in post-match.
it's just a great clip of them all watching it. Absolutely love that. I think with Dan Juma, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because like Dyche has got these clear non-negotiables, hasn't he? Which is about working hard and that kind of stuff. And that's why McNeil's in there, clearly. But I do sort of look at that side of the pitch, like especially with Mikhailenko there, who, as you said, has been so good and is so solid defensively. And it feels like if you're going to get away with it in any part of the pitch, like maybe it's that side. Like you look at Mikhailenko and you think he's not necessarily like a Patterson because of his Patterson's age, or a Coleman because of his maybe lack of mobility now, or the same goes with Young when he plays right back, where you look at the right-hand side and you think they probably need a bit of protection in regards to where they play because they've got flaws in the game. It feels like with Mikhailenko, you could kind of say to him, you don't want this situation, obviously, but if you're in a one-on-one situation or you've got to jockey a couple of players and you know the left-back, sorry, the left midfielder's not getting back quite as quick, then he's kind of defensively capable and athletic enough to deal with it. And then that might give you a bit more going forward the other way, if that makes sense. Because Dan Juma, I think he's shown that, you know, he's really frustrating at times as well, but he definitely has something different compared to our other wide players. Like, he's more of a centre forward, isn't he, that plays that wide, as opposed to a left midfielder who plays as a left winger, if that makes sense. Like, McNeil is very much a left winger, isn't he? Like, Harrison is very much a right winger or a left winger. Like, Dan Juma's a forward, isn't he? And I think we've seen bits of that in his Everton career so far. You think of his goal he scored at Doncaster, you think of the goal he scored at Sheffield United, just getting in at the back post and just being alert and taking the chance. So I just wonder if, and this probably not, because Dyche is very obviously set, his non-negotiables will stay non-negotiables, but I just look at that part of the pitch and think if there's an area where you can maybe get away with, in inverted commas, a luxury player to give you a bit more going forward and give you something a little bit more of a spark, then maybe it's that position in front of Mikalenko.
I'm a little bit the opposite of that with him, because I think it's been essential for Mikalenko to work with somebody on the left-hand side. I don't see Dan Juma coming into our half of the pitch. I couldn't see him doing that whatsoever. What you mentioned there is the positive side of him is he can drift across the whole front line if needed. I think that we're going to get the best out of him is if he's sort of given a license to do that, to be a little bit more free in what he can do and not just stick to where Dyche has told him to. With Mikalenko, I think he's got such discipline in what you need him to do. He's not going to be out there overlapping Dan Juma or playing 1-2s with him. I think that what you've mentioned there sort of...
Would that kind of make it work, though, in like a perverse sort of... Because it's not going to be Baines and PNR, is it, ever? Like, those two link together so well.
Yeah.
Well, like, I don't think you necessarily... Because the left-back and left midfield, I don't necessarily think they need to pass the ball to each other loads or link together loads. Like, I think if Dan Juma's going to stay forward more and give us more of an attacking outlet, then in turn you can say to Mikalenko, well, you don't push forward as much, you just be a bit more cautious when he runs forward. And then if the ball does get turned over, then we're covered in that area of the pitch, if that makes sense. But you're getting more going the other way.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're paying a small price for what you want Mikalenko to do. Look, we've seen him do some fantastic things. We've seen him score. We've seen him put crosses in. He seems to really love that side of the pitch where he can burst forward. I think he's good enough, and I think he's disciplined enough to be told, right, just hold back a little bit more. You know, it's not fully required when you've got a player who we really got. The whole reason we got Dan Juma was to create assists or score goals. He doesn't necessarily need Mikalenko to do that. Should have more efficient players in and around him in the forward line. So therefore, like you say there, I think it'll help us a lot more. You know, maybe you're looking at it thinking, well, it takes away an opportunity for us to score more goals. But then, you know, it's more important defensively than we are conceding when you've got the difficulty of having somebody who, like you say, Baines and PNR. It's never, ever, ever going to be like that. I mean, they're two legends when we associate partnerships in the side. But with McNeil out, who's another one who's a bit of a workhorse, then you're having to tell Mikalenko to do probably an original job you'll get told to do as a left-back when he's learning his trade. He's not going to be like throwing a running forward as often as possible. I don't believe left-backs are brought up that way. I think it's more of a natural trade if the... want to start running on to whoever's playing left in front of them. I think he's more than capable of being a little bit more disciplined and told to just hold back a little bit more. You don't have to try and play 1-2s. You don't have to run beyond whoever's on the left-hand side and get to the byline. That to me, I'm a little bit more confident about than certainly more than Dan Juma getting back anyway.
Yeah, and I suppose the other option, you know, the manager said he doesn't like this system and he's even though he's played it a few times this season. It didn't work at Wolves at all, did it? Worked at Villa in the Cup, worked at Burnley in the league, but a back three. And again, just thinking about options and how we might go with it. And I'm sure people listening to that, me saying that thing straight away, no, Michael Keane, do not want it. But do you think maybe, and I don't know if this Dyche would go this way because I think he likes his centre-backs to be centre-backs very much, but do you think Coleman being fit again could give him the option of playing Shames as that kind of third centre-back on the right-hand side? Like, he did really well for a bit, didn't he, under under Lampard, and then you can get Patterson as your right wing back, who gives you more on that side. So all of a sudden, you've got Tarkowski and Branthwaite still in the back three. You've got Coleman as sort of being that half full back, half centre back, which I think you always need in that system for it to work. And then you've got two, you know, full backs in Mikalenko and Patterson, who are athletic and can actually get forward and give us something on that side. And then obviously you lose a player from the midfield positions then, the attacking positions then, but that's McNeil, isn't it? He's not in the team. So just wondering if Coleman just kind of opens up a few options, doesn't he, in terms of Young maybe playing left wing, going back to a back three, getting Patterson as a right wing back. And I suppose even at this point, you want Seamus in the team, don't you? Even after all this time and how old he is, because I think we've seen when he has played briefly this season that Everton have been much better.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's more you set up a line that you're basically saying to your opponents, you're not going to pass, you're not going to get past us or beyond us. Probably play a little deeper. I think that's, you know, really common what Dyche is like, really. And wants to stay as solid as he possibly can with a back four / back five. Interesting what you say there about Patterson there as a right wing back as well. The one thing you don't want, and it's quite sad to say this, given Seamus in the sort of the latter years of his career, let's be honest, what is he now, 36, 35, yeah. 36? You've got somebody you don't want in his entire career. I don't know if this is harsh for me, but I think many people have also said it, but you don't want him crossing the ball. You don't want him getting to the byline and crossing the ball. Obviously, what we've seen from him, I think that goal he scored against Leeds last season, they're one-offs, that type of thing. I mean, one weakness he's had is crossing the ball, if we're honest. So, again, somebody who can be far more disciplined to sort of hold it and stay back. When I love him bombing forward. I love it when he cuts inside. He's obviously a lot better throwing a ball across the 6-yard box or the 18 yards rather than trying to, you know, pin pick somebody who's in the box that he's going to throw a header at. I'd like to see Patterson that side. I think it's ironic, really, man, with the issues we've got on both sides of the pitch. It sounds like really balanced what you've said there. You know, if when McNeil's fifth, then you've got, if you went like Coleman, Patterson, that side, I think you're looking at a solid partnership. Patterson loves getting forward as well. I think he's a lot better crosser of the ball. He loves cutting inside too. That could be really promising. That could be something that I think Dyche might well look at in what we do, particularly against Aston Villa, coming to Goodison as well. That game's huge for us against Villa. You know, you think that I wasn't happy that we drew in the FA Cup and we've got another extra game coming, given how difficult our run is. But I suppose there's a little chance in that as well, where you can experiment with a few different positions and whatnot.
Yeah, and I think, like, going back to Coleman as well, like, when you talk about him now, when he has a good game, we're not talking about him going forward, are we? Or putting crosses in, like you said, or taking players on like he used to do, God, yeah, 10 years ago now. Like, it's all about his defensive play now, isn't it? And, like, you know, you think back to games last season where he did really well. Like, it was against players like Zaha and Martinelli, and you go, wow, he handled that winger really well. I just think, like, that position was, like, the right sense. Maybe it's something the manager will look at as we go forward, but maybe not. It's the other thing we've got to consider as well, Dave. Obviously, we're waiting on the result of the appeal for Dom after his red card. Big chance for Beto potentially coming up as well. Got to say, not been totally convinced by him yet. Still waiting. You know, I think people love him because of his endeavour and his work rate, and I can get on board with that. But he's not got much finesse to his game at all, has he? And I think it's one of them where, as much as there's a lot of people at the moment giving Dom criticism for the way he's playing and he's not scoring goals, and, you know, I kind of get that. There's a lot of calls for Beto to come into the side. I just kind of fought against City when it was Beto up front and not Calvert-Lewin. You're kind of pining for even a non-goal scoring Dominic Calvert-Lewin. But listen, he might have a chance in the coming weeks, might need to show what he can do. He's not had a real run of games, has he, since the start of the season either. So massive chance for him potentially.
I tell you what, I often think about the chat and the interview we did with the guys from Italy, the journalists from Italy. Every word they said to us was absolutely spot on about him, really, wasn't it? You know, you'll get all of his endeavour. He'll give absolutely everything when he gets on the pitch, but that's something that you don't necessarily need when you're looking for a Premier League striker. He's fast, he can't control the ball too well. He's the type of player that will score a really scrappy goal. I think that's the best you're going to see from him. I really like him. Do you know what? Something that I feel is, and you've just done it there, and I do it myself, whenever you mention his name, there's sort of a smile to your face. There's a, I wouldn't say laughing at the guy, but there's a there's a thing about him when he's up there, and he's not a traditional player, let alone as a striker. He's, you know, if you were watching him in, I don't know, when he was a kid, you'd be thinking, yeah, this is a big fella up front. He's want to try and cross the ball for to score goals with his head more than anything else. He's done brilliantly to get to where he is, the level at which he's at. But I do think he's going to be essential this season, and certainly in the next few games if Dom's sending off isn't retracted. I think as well, I don't like the stereotype Dyche, but go back to when he was at Burnley. He'd play him in every single game, along with Ashley Barnes and the others who he's had up front. That's what he wants. I think he has been as well reluctant to do that sort of style of football since he's been at us. Often it works. You know, if you've got a back five, like you said there, if you've got wing backs or full backs who you want to hold back a little bit, he's probably much more of an ideal player that you're looking to play it to. Now, the age old problem for that is who you put up there with him. That's where you're massively missing the core. I think you've got somebody as a 10 there if you're knocking it up to him to try and control it and lay it off. I don't think we're much suited to that style of play. Unless the core is in there, he does a fantastic job doing that. I think me and you have mentioned like how inconsistent he can be at times. That's going to be difficult to manufacture. Oh, we're going to have a lot of chances in this game and Beto's going to be able to score goals quite regularly. I don't think that's going to happen. But what else have we got? I mean, you mentioned Dan Juma there. I don't think the way in which we play, you could put him up front comfortably. You know, people even spoke about earlier this season when they were saying Calvert-Lewin and Beto was a front two. I wouldn't even consider that whatsoever. I know you're laughing at that, mate.
The Brothers of Destruction, Kane and The Undertaker.
The Undertaker and Kane. Yeah, but, you know, that's I don't know if he's as diverse to look at that, Dyche, and thinking Dan Juma you put up there. He's probably more interesting if he wants to go for something like, you know, a slight 1-2 or something like that. But he's put on as more as a, you know, somebody's like, you want him to bash through people. You want him to create different chances. You want him to be a little bit of a bully. You should have got that penalty against Crystal Palace. That's the type of player he is, I think, who can physically bounce himself about. But also, I mentioned this when we first got him in the first couple of games we saw him. But he reminds me a lot of Paolo Onechop back in the day. I hope we've got an old enough listeners about this. But
yeah,
you'd see somebody who's identical to him, couldn't control the ball, anything like that, but you'd see him pick the ball up about 30 yards from goal, rip past about five or six players, and score an absolute wonder goal.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Beto thinking, I think that's you, mate. I think at one point he's going to score a crucial goal for us. He has that type of feeling from what we've seen from him. But at least, I mean, you know, the worst you're going to get is him trying. Like, it's very rare that I see a player who throw themselves in. I know it's cliche that, you know, a player always gives 100%. You know, you've seen this lad and how much he loves Everton as well.
Yeah.
That type of thing, if he's able to do something a little bit more than what we've seen, then you've got an asset who we desperately need when you've just got one striker. I mean, how often in recent years have we had more than one striker to rely upon? Now, I'm not going as far as saying we're going to rely upon him, but you think about the days of like Yakubu, Sahar. You'd never see a front two at Everton I can't even think back to when we've played the 4-4-2. That's not going to happen at Everton. So that essentially means you're one man that goes out. You've got to find the solution. I think he's the next best to try it.
Yeah, he's very easy to root for, isn't he? And I think that's why fans really love him still at the moment. And
but like, Stracolacy, did you mention Stracolacy?
No, you think he's better than him, isn't he? Like,
I know, but that style, yeah, that sort of feeling that. I remember he scored. He scored a goal when we beat Chelsea at home 2-0 when he was with us.
And he scuffed it over, checked, didn't he? Yeah.
That's it. Sometimes you looked at him and thought, "How's he ended up here?" in the opposite way that you always used to say your infamous line about there's a reason why players end up at Everton. We've said that about really good ones that we think have come to us. We're told.
I don't know. He ended up with us. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think Beto's like this is all like great. I think everyone rightly loves him, but it's one of them where it's like, should we be talking this way about a 26 million pound striker as well? Like, you know, I don't know. It's obviously still early days. He's not played loads, but it's like we spent, you know, considering our financial situation, and listen, I know that the payment's staggered and all that, but we're going to end up paying a pretty large amount of money for this lad further down the line. But I think I also think the other thing is like it's quite cruel on Calvert-Lewin in a sense that I think he's missed Decore so much since Decore's been out. And now Decore's going to be back in the team, potentially, well, should be in the team on Sunday, and Calvert-Lewin's going to be missing for three games. So the times out of the team have just not, you know, overlapped at all. So that should be really interesting as well. But I mean, it's going to be great to have him back, isn't it, Decore? It's, you know, I think it's getting close to a year today. Dave, remember he came on in the cup game against Man United under Lampard, and we hadn't seen him for months, and he came on and played really well. And it was a case of like, oh, forgot about this fella, you know, maybe he could offer something for us going forward. And since then, obviously Lampard got sacked, and it's one of those sliding doors moments, isn't it? If he'd gone to Fulham that January, who knows what predicaments we would have been in.
Yeah, spot on. And, you know, if you're talking about somebody who is all about endeavour and somebody who wants to really try when they get on the pitch, he epitomises that, doesn't he, when he comes on. I think at times as well, I've certainly been guilty, and a lot of others have been guilty of thinking, you know, he's somebody else we need to sell for money, basically. Gone and signed a new contract there, and look, I won't go as far as saying he looks like a completely different player, but he seems to be playing in a position that he's really comfortable with, and looks a real threat when he has the ball. We've relied upon him heavily, haven't we, in the last couple of years as well. He's got that goal against Bournemouth, of course, last day of the season last year to keep us up. I think he's a crucial player to us, Matt. He's probably up there in the top two or three that you essentially need if you think Everton are going to be successful. It's, you know, it's no coincidence when you look at the four games he run on the spin. He was in there. I don't know, again, he's another one that doesn't look comfortable when he's on the ball. But and I don't want to do him a disservice like that, but it's not really traditional the way he plays. And I think that helps him. I think that he's a player, he loves to run, he loves to run in behind. He's got so much of a versatile game that he does affect opposition. He does, they can't obviously look at him. If you're an opposition manager, you're not looking at him and thinking, right, someone stick there with him, because he'll move all over the place. He's allowed freedom in that area there in the final third. So getting him back without Dom, obviously it's vice versa, isn't it, really? But you've got somebody who'll score goals as long as you can get the ball to him in that position. And that's going to be key. You look at the midfield there, you look at players getting the ball into him, he can hold it up. That's where I think there might be a difficulty when you've got Beto in there, because he's not going to do what Dom does, let's face it. But you're looking at the likes of Harrison cutting inside, finding him, like I say, 20 yards out, looking for a 1-2, looking for someone to cross it in for him. That versatility is exactly what you need in front of goal. It's getting the ball to him that's going to be the issue.
Yeah, strap in. It's going to be a busy few weeks, isn't it? We've got loads coming up this week. Looking ahead to get that game against Aston Villa. Subs weekly. We'll have weekend preview. I think I'm doing my old new borrowed blue this week as well. Laura's was out last week. That was a great
Brilliant.
Lesson. Big Seamus Coleman loving. As you know, I don't think I'm giving anything away there by saying that either.
No, I think with Paddy's one as well, Leighton Baines. Let's face it,
I'm still thinking about a few of mine, I'm not gonna lie. So
the key is, like, you know, it's hard to avoid the obvious ones who've been legendary for us, but I think there's plenty of others that you can throw in there as well. So it's a really good listen as well, the way Les conducts it and things like that. I'd implore anybody to give it a listen.
I'll tell you what, Laura made you and Paddy look like dickheads by saying that her granddad was a favourite Evertonian, and you were like, John Paris, and Paddy was like, Jodie Comer.
Jodie Comer.
Yeah, Laura gave a really heartfelt, lovely answer, and you two were just like, oh yeah. Paddy was like, oh yeah, I just love Jodie Comer's acting, and you were like, oh, John Paris, greatest sneak.
Les Roberts needs to sell it better then, because the way in which he said it, it was like, yeah, you've got to come up with someone famous, like a celebrity. And listen, I feel like quite fair to say John Parrott. You told many people these days, who's John Parrott? I don't reckon more. I reckon maybe 5 or 6 people out of 10, particularly younger, would say,
yeah,
oh yeah, I know he's a snooker player who's won the world championship in the early 90s. So I'm defending myself with John Parrott in there. Jody Comer is like A-list celebrity, so I'm not having that from Paddy.
There we go. I'll have to think of mine after that then. I'll probably go down the celeb route, I reckon, as well. But we'll leave it there. Cheers for listening. Watching on YouTube, like I said, like, subscribe, comment. How are Everton going to cope without McNeil? What are they going to do about Dominic Calvert-Lewin? Let us know your thoughts on that. And if you're listening on the podcast, give us a rating, give us a review. All these things help into the new year. But we'll be back later in the week. Full steam ahead to Aston Villa. Up the toppies. We'll speak to you soon.
Network.